remember the resources boom. Wasn't that history? Yeah, okay. No, I'm not talking about the one that we kind of are going through, but it's coming to an end here. There was a massive resources boom in Australia, particularly in Victoria, centuries ago. The gold rush, all of that sort of thing. And I want you to imagine that this is going on and you see this from, say, Asia, and you decide, that's it, I want a piece of the action. And so you make your way to Australia. And then you've got to figure out how exactly you're going to survive. You know, the basic things that you need to take advantage of something like a resources boom, like, I don't know, talking to people. And so you log on to see if you can find... No, you can't log on because there's no internet. There's nothing. You can't even get a translation book. What do you do? Well, it was a situation that was faced by many Chinese migrants in the 1860s during the gold rush, and they came up with a solution. And it's quite a remarkable-looking solution, as well as just an inherently remarkable solution. To take us through what that solution was, I'm joined by Dr. Sophie Couchman, who's a curator at the Chinese Museum in Melbourne and an honorary research fellow at La Trobe University. Sophie, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
What have you got here?
I have this amazing phrase book, which I just love. I think it's one of the key objects in our museum. And what it basically is it's a guide to help you to speak English.
And it's for people
who speak Cantonese, or even more specifically, Siyap. Right. Or Siyi is how you pronounce it now in Mandarin. So most of the Chinese who came to Victoria during the gold rushes came from Guangdong, came from southern China, and from the area of Siyap, which just means four districts, near to Canton. So just as it was then, it's the same now. Mm. There's a standard Cantonese dialect that's a kind of generic form, and then there are lots of small dialects within that. And this phrase book helps you to pronounce English words if you can speak the standard Cantonese or if you speak the Siyap dialect.
So it's not doing translation so much as transliteration, is
that
right?
That's right. There's also a translation so that you know what you're saying. Yeah. So one line is the Chinese, the phrase in Chinese. One line is the phrase in English. And then there's two lines, one each, that allow you to pronounce the words in
the
English using, in Chinese characters.
Now, I don't speak any Chinese language or anything that vaguely resembles one, but I imagine this is very difficult because the letters don't correspond. And so you're having to learn whole new forms of pronunciation, and then transliterating a language where you don't have corresponding letters is extraordinarily difficult.
Yeah, well, it's also difficult because Chinese is actually tonal and English isn't. So you're actually, the tricky thing for English people learning Chinese is to put the tones in, but when you're speaking Chinese, you sort of have to take them out.
I see.
So what they're doing, each character is a particular sound, and then that they match that as best they can with an English sound. And there is quite a few pages of instructions at the beginning of the phrase book to help you read the characters and adjust them and adjust how you like move your tone up at the end of the sentence and that kind of thing. So they're quite elaborate instructions.
That's extraordinary. I haven't even considered that. That's amazing. So great idea, obviously very important idea, but who had the skills to put this together?
Well, it's very interesting. In China, they were producing phrase books from the Ming Dynasty, which is about 1300s to 1600s.
So they're old hands at it by this time.
Yeah. Well, the thing that's interesting is that those phrase books are Southeast Asian languages. They're Malay, they're Vietnamese, rather than English. But once the gold rush happens, then there's much more demand for English. So what is very interesting about this phrase book and makes it different from many other phrase books that come from this era, is the man who produced it has actually included some little notes in the book, including that he had spent some time in Castlemaine. So we know that he actually lived on the goldfields, and he writes about how he created this phrase book to help other Chinese coming to the goldfields to find their way and to kind of basically to share the wisdom that he had.
So he was Chinese. He was Chinese, and he'd gone through the hard yards of learning English.
So he was born in in Guangzhou, and had gone through the hard yards. There was possibly some English training that you could do in China, but it would have been fairly rudimentary, I imagine.
I can imagine. Now, I can read certain non-Latin scripts. I can read Arabic, for example. And one of the things I always find amazing is when you read something in Arabic and you realise halfway through it's actually an English phrase that's been transliterated.
Yes.
The way you end up saying it by reading it in that language with that script, it always sounds really, really weird.
Yes,
it sounds bizarre. And I'm desperate to hear what this would sound like. So I know you spoke to a couple of people who were Malaysian Chinese.
Yes. One person who's Malaysian Chinese and one person who was Hong Kong Chinese.
So this is not exactly the same as someone who was in the 1860s.
No, because the dialects are actually different now. Yeah. But also the Cantonese dialects, of course, changed when people were in Hong Kong and Malaysia. So
it's
an approximation.
All right, but I'm desperate to hear it. I haven't heard this before, so I'm desperate to hear this. We'll see what it sounds like. Let's have a listen.
Melbourne.
Correct.
Ngalalat.
Ararat.
Correct.
Wow.
Yeah.
Gingulo.
I'll give you a hint. It's also an Australian animal.
Yeah.
Kangaroo.
Kangaroo, yeah. Yeah, kangaroo, yeah.
Kangaroo.
I reckon they're going to struggle. I mean, it's a fair distance from what they're trying to communicate.
It is. And in fact, that's fairly true to life. We created some little podcasts and we had a bit of a play around, the three of us. And what we were doing in that exercise is it was a guessing game to guess what was being said.
Yeah.
And it was genuinely, you know, we're like, no idea.
The other fascinating thing about this is what you translate. I mean, if you're going to provide a guidebook, normally what you're doing is trying to identify the phrases you can't live without, the most essential important phrases and how to say them and how to get by in that way. So this would be a record that reflects what the Chinese population at least considered important to be able to say.
Exactly. And it's one of the reasons why I think this book is so valuable and so important, because we have so little documentation and so little information about what Chinese were thinking and what they were doing and things from their perspective. And this phrase book really opens that right out. One of the things that's quite interesting about it is that you would imagine it would have lots of mining terms in it because it's the gold rushes. But in fact, there's very few phrases in there. There's a few, a little bit about jumping mines, a little bit about buying pickaxes. But mostly what it's about doing business and it's about making conversation. And
like small talk?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So they got very early on that the small talk was
really
important.
The small talk is very much a part of it. And there's things to do with dispute resolution. So some of it is like, I will fight you. And some of it was, you know, surely we can work this out in another way. There's a whole range of language in there. And some of the phrases, because they're so they're so mundane and they're actually very unexpected. There's lots of things in this phrase book that we wouldn't imagine. Like, it doesn't give you the days of the week. It doesn't give you numbers. It does give you the alphabet written in different forms, different typesets. But then it has, you know, sort of, you know, things like he is lazy, we are humble, a mild man. There's lots of phrases for describing people's personalities.
So what's great about this is it encourages you to imagine the scenarios that would arise
for you to use
these phrases.
And what is great, some of them are totally dislocated, but some of them sort of flow so that you actually start to imagine a scenario. So the one I'll read out to you starts, why do you abuse me? Because you told my shortcomings to my father. My father is very angry with me. Who told you about it?
It's incredible.
And you just, I mean, instantly.
What happened there?
I don't need to say anything. Everyone is already going, oh, my God, big family drama.
Yeah.
What has he done?
Or possibly work-related drama where the family's been sucked in. You could write a play based around these phrases. Given what you've seen in this book, how would you describe the Chinese community at this time? What were they? What can we learn about them?
I think what you get from this is a much more sophisticated understanding about what's going on. It makes you realise that there's potentially a lot more communication going on between the Chinese community and other people on the goldfields, which people tend to focus on the racism and on the violence that were also present. But this also shows that there were other kinds of communication going on that were about, you know, talking about someone being a greedy man and a lazy man, and that were about getting to know people. There's things about, you know, where are you going? How are you getting somewhere? Where's the next gold rush? I think there's an aspirational level happening here too.
Yeah.
And it's an empowering book. It's, you know, these Chinese are not coming over to Australia totally helpless.
It's an extraordinary book. So thank you so much for talking to us about
it. My pleasure.
It's incredible stuff. That's Dr. Sophie Couchman, who's the curator at the Chinese Museum and honorary research fellow at La Trobe University. Thanks so much, Sophie.
Thank you.
That's it for that segment, of course. Drawing Room is up next. We'll lead Ali with you for Drive till 8 o'clock.